Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everybody, and good morning for us. We decided to do this in the morning today because we were all a little bit tired last night. We are here to give you a wrap-up of day 11 of the Australian Open. Wow, oh wow, oh wow, what a couple of matches we had yesterday. Certainly there was one or two that were really great and ones that were a little bit shocking. So I want to kind of start with the shocking one first, Petco. I know we start with the first one of the day, but I have to talk about last night's match with Alcaraz and Zverev. What the frickin' hell was Alcaraz's game plan last night? Yeah, he was just so bad.
Well, yes. I mean, I don't know what else to say, but yes, we watched it together and we were yelling at the TV a lot, and not necessarily because Zverev was playing a great match and Alcaraz was not playing well. It was the game plan, right?
Yeah.
Because you sometimes as a tennis player, you can't quite control how well you are going to play. You just have off days. You have days where your feet are not working, where you don't see the ball as clearly. And these are all things that you can somewhat control. And that's what we do in training and preparation and how we eat and when we sleep and all these things. But there are just days that are a little bit off. But that doesn't matter because the game plan, you can always somewhat control. And he was going with every serve, with every backhand, with every sitter into Sasha's backhand, who we all know. And I think even people who don't play tennis and follow tennis know that Zverev has a way better backhand and a much worse forehand. And so just game plan wise, it was mesmerizing. Jim Courier, who was calling the match, had a great analysis, like always. He's so good. But he kept saying he just seems flustered mentally. He can't seem to think clearly. And despite him turning the third set around, I said, I don't think he's going to win today. He just looks completely off. And Zverev will, you know, Sasha, he choked. Yes, he choked. He got tight. But he won't do it again. You know, if you give him the opportunity to come back, he won't do it twice. He won't do it three times. And he didn't. He served it out and he played well.
Well, he didn't get the chance to choke it and do what he did in the third set because he didn't have to hit forehands under pressure. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing that just was we were so bemused watching it. I'm like, does this guy know that Sasha's backhand is literally one of the best ever?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't miss his backhand. He can hit it anywhere. He can go line, he can go cross court. He can put power through it, which is sometimes what gives Carlos some problems, is the ball coming right hard through the court.
Mm.
But with the forehand with Zverev, it's always going to be with top spin. I'm not saying that he can't hit a good forehand, but the likelihood of him missing backhands and not being as aggressive with the backhand is not going to happen. He's going to continue to hit his backhand. Whereas forehand, you can see his mind is like ticking over. Oh my God, do I go cross? Do I play safe? He was shanking. And when he lost the game serving for it, he didn't serve a great game, but he also was missing forehand. So I don't understand why Alcaraz, who there's no question was flustered and was like complaining in the first couple of sets, which he never does, why he didn't see, oh, I got back into the set because I played the guy's forehand, came into the net a little bit, and all of a sudden I'm into the fourth set. I don't understand why he didn't stick with that game plan.
Yeah, that was the most shocking probably of the whole thing, because as I said, Sasha was playing a great match. And I have to say one thing that jumped at me yesterday. I do think Carlos has still one thing that he needs to improve, because we see these players like Zverev who bother him, Novak who bother him. He doesn't really have a flat inside in forehand. He can flatten it out inside out, but he doesn't really, he always plays it with a bit of loop and spin, the ball that like jumps and moves out the court, which is great against most of the guys out there, but against Zverev and Novak, who move so well and who have the type of forehand who need a little time to get under it, that like that moving ball,
it bounces up into, especially Zverev's forehand, because
and he can still somehow put it back and get back into the point. And that's one thing he needs to work on, I think, is to learn how to flatten it. And that's why he was playing all these terrible drop shots, because he could feel that he can't, the inside out, the flat one is not working because Zverev has the best backhand that ever crossed this earth, maybe.
Yeah.
And the forehand inside in, he's not making winners because Zverev gets underneath it and he's really, really fast for such a tall guy. Zverev is an incredible mover and he gets underneath it and he doesn't have the flat inside in. And I kept yelling at him, do Anna Ivanovic, do Anna Ivanovic, because she had the best inside in flat forehand. Yeah. And I'm not expecting him to hit the ball as flat as Anna Ivanovic did. But Anna had this inside in forehand that could put anybody on the back foot, and it was so hard to control. And he just needs something in between Carlos Alcaraz and Anna Ivanovic, I think, if he wants to beat the Novaks and Zverevs on a regular basis. He can beat them, but he needs to play really well. We saw it with Zverev a few times now. He's 3-5 now in the head-to-head. And when he has beaten Zverev, either Zverev had a really tough five-setter, at the US Open, when he played five sets against Jannik Sinner, or he had a schedule issue in Madrid when he played until 3 a.m. So he was always like kind of tired, and Carlos had to play really well. So clearly the matchup is not working for him, and he needs to figure something out if he wants to beat him on a regular basis in the future.
Yeah, it was just crazy. I honestly thought when he won the third set he was going to win, and Sasha was struggling with, it looked like blisters on his right foot, because he was, he ran up for one drop shot in the middle part of the fourth set and he grimaced and he wasn't sliding at all. He ran through the ball, and when you run through the ball, it's either because you don't want to put pressure on your, you know, whatever problem you have, whether it be your ankle or your, you know, toes or your knees or whatever it is, you just sort of like keep running. And he was doing that, so I'm like, dude, like your dude down the other end is like starting to physically struggle a little bit, and here you are playing his best shot. Like, I was just blown away how, frankly,
dumb
Carlos was last night, you know. And I don't know, I still put it a little bit down his youth, where he's sort of like not really thinking clearly. I don't know if Carlos, Juan Carlos Ferreira would have been there just screaming shit at him, because Juan Carlos is so like vocal with him. I just wonder if he needed like literally someone to be like, dude, remember what side's really good on his and not play it. It was the same as like a couple of matches over the last few days that we've watched, whether it be Marta Kostyuk playing to, you know, Coco's backhand under pressure, whether it be various different players. And you're just like, why can you not understand? Stick with the weaker shot until they stop beating you with it.
Like, and that's exactly what Jim said yesterday. And he said it about the serve, but I think it's applicable to, or applicable to anything. He said, so Zverev on the ad side loves the down the T serve. And everyone knows it, and there are stats about it. And I think literally everybody knows that if you play Sasha Zverev, that he likes the on the ad side, the T serve with a little bit of slice. And so when Carlos had a break point, and he had a break point early in the second set,
it happened a couple times.
And who knows how the match goes if he wins the second set, because he was down 1-6, 3-6. They had only played an hour. And that's when you panic, right? When you're down two sets and you've only played an hour, you haven't found your rhythm, you haven't found your footwork, and all of a sudden you're already down two sets. And he had an early break point. And Jim said before the serve was hit, you have to close down the tee, have him beat you with his weaker side.
Yeah.
And Carlos didn't. Zverev aced him down the tee, and then he won the set 6-3.
Yeah.
And it just shows you the loss of clarity he had yesterday, just not seeing clearly. And I think Jim said it, this is the first time we see some kind of junior Carlos Alcaraz. We think of him as so maturely because he's so talented.
And so good. I mean, it's a guy who's won two Grand Slams already at his age. It's pretty spectacular. But yesterday
was not a good confusion.
Yes. Yesterday was a confusion.
Not a good tactical, not a good tactical approach to the match.
This guy, Zverev, what the fuck? I mean, he's got all this shit going on in his life. You know, in May, he's supposed to be in court. He's like, you know, contesting this fine, this fee that he has to pay. I mean, there's a lot going on in his after off the court life. And he just keeps winning. and tournaments keep promoting it, and it's just like, what the hell? I mean, wow.
Well, one sports psychologist said something really interesting to me one time. I was struggling with something private too, and I couldn't win any matches, and I was just under so much duress and pressure and just couldn't separate it, basically. And he said to me, there are two types of people, especially athletes. There are some who bring their private problems with them on court, and they just can't find the clarity and focus to perform on their best.
You.
Me, for example. And there are other athletes who feel the safest on the tennis court or on the football pitch or on the soccer pitch, whatever you may call it, where they this is the one place they can escape their private problems. Right. And that's why they performed the best. And when the first allegations came up against Sasha Zverev, he won two tournaments. And now he's playing incredible again. He played really well at United Cup. And maybe this is what he it feels like to him, like a safe space. And that's what and he played a great match. And I have to say one thing about him. That guy is really pain resilient. He is a tough motherfucker. Really. Like you can say
I think that's the Russian in him.
Probably, certainly not the German.
Well, that's my point. I didn't want to say that in front of you, but you're also got, you know, Serbian parents. So you have a little tough motherfucker in you as well, because I think that's also part of your DNA.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it with Sabalenka, who's Belarusian, obviously, but we saw it with Sabalenka in a different manner. And Zverev had the yips too, and he just went about his business. Mm. He just continued, and everyone was making fun of him and laughing at him.
And some people would have broken down, like Sabalenka and Zverev, but you just think that's that dogged, like, determination and just his upbringing and whatever. But anyway. That was a huge upset in some respects, but in some respects it wasn't because of the head-to-head and just the way that Sasha
and
plays.
And we both are a strong believer in head-to-heads. We keep bringing up. There is a reason players put you... When you see a head-to-head like that, you can tell that this particular player puts Carlos in uncomfortable positions. Yep. And then it's our job as an analyst to look at the match and see why. And yesterday I saw a thing with this forehand inside out that I thought was one reasons. Inside in, sorry. That was one of the reasons. There are many other reasons because of the backhand flat, the flat shot from Sasha and many other reasons.
But, and a great serve. He keeps him, you know, he's in control of the service points from the beginning. He serves a lot, you know, to the forehand, which normally, you know, you get in trouble with Carlos because he has such a great forehand, but his serve goes away from his forehand. It really slides away. And so with his grip and and he's not the tallest, Carlos. And so it's like moving away from him. On the other hand, he's going to have to serve really well in the next match because Daniil Medvedev, what a freaking match that was. Mm. Oh, my God. Has Hubi Hurkacz played more matches that go the distance, whether it be three sets or five sets?
I was just surprised they didn't play more tiebreaks. It was just one tiebreak. Yeah. I feel like Hubi normally plays at least seven tiebreaks.
I think it was so hot yesterday that they were getting a bit flustered, and particularly Daniil Medvedev said that after the second set he was dead, and it was quite hot when they were playing. So I think it was just a matter of, oh, shit, like how much do I want to fight to get back into this set? So when it went to the fifth, it was really incredible tennis, and Daniil Medvedev pulled out some just crazy shit at the end to win that match. And I loved his, what the hell was that drop shot on match point? I was like, we're all in the green room, like, go to the net, like, go to the net. He's like, no, he's like runs into the net and he decides to hit a drop shot off the forehand. And he even said it in the post-match interview to Jim. He's like, hey, you like my drop shot on match point? I mean, the guy is such a character. It's unbelievable. But what do you think? I want to talk about the matchup a little bit with Medvedev and Zverev. Mm-hmm. Like, what are your thoughts on that one?
Well, it's really interesting. They seem to be running into each other every single tournament. It feels like every single tournament they are playing each other. And so far, Medvedev is winning those matches, but they are always really close. They are 6-4 in the third, 7-5 in the third, and they are ugly at times. Not all of them, but the Indian Wells match was ugly. The Monte Carlo match was ugly. The Cincinnati match was terrible, absolutely atrocious. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think they both don't like playing each other, you know, in a sense. And it will be really interesting to see whether Medvedev will be affected by the Netflix portrayal of him, where Netflix kind of portrayed him as the villain and who Zverev had to overcome to get this to his comeback or something. I haven't seen it. It's just what
I've heard as well. I haven't seen it either. But how can you make anyone out to be the villain other than Zverev? Like, what is your problem, Netflix? Are you kidding me? The guy's up for like, oh my God. Anyway, we won't get into that. I know you probably want us all to get into that. Give us the juice, Stubbsy. But I think the fact that they made Medvedev out to be the villain in that situation is just hilarious.
Well, and we will see. I don't think he thinks about these things that much, but no. Still, he might have an extra motivation to try and win this. I think Medvedev looked brilliant at times. I do think he looked a little bit patchy. And what I mean by that he had always had sets where he played really bad, or patches of play where he played really, really bad. And I think Sasha is playing very solid, and I'm not sure he can afford that against Sasha at this tournament.
But don't you think that he won't do that? I think he knows that he could be a little bit patchy against Hubi just because Hubi's a great player. Don't get me wrong. But he knows that Hubi also gets a little tight.
Yeah.
He's not quite as solid from the back of the court. All the things, right? And Hubi also has an amazing serve. But I think that he'll be switched on for this match because he knows exactly what he's going to get. To me, it was hilarious yesterday. It looked like Zverev when he was playing the match towards the end. It looked like he was the guy that, like, they forgot to when you went out to the desert for a walk, or you went up like
you mean Medvedev?
Medvedev. Yeah. When you went up for a walk up the mountains, you went for a hike, you know, and you're like, hey, man, where did Zverev go? I mean, where did Medvedev go? And you're like, I don't know. Weren't you supposed to bring him with? Wait, oh, my God, we've lost him. And then 5 days later, he comes walking out of the desert like he's like sunburned. His face is like got third degree burns on it. His hair is all over the place. He's like, guys, you left me out there. I swear, in the fifth set, that's what he looked like. It was no hat, clearly no sunscreen. He's going to have like third degree burns on his nose and the side of his face. He just cracks me up, cracks me up.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, I don't know. I mean, I'm obviously pulling for him to win that semifinal.
Well, and he did, I thought that the US Open, he did a similar thing. We don't know yet. But at the US Open, he looked really patchy in all his matches. Always had stretches of matches. Well, always had stretches of play where he looked really, really bad. And when Medvedev looks bad, he looks terrible. I'm sorry. And then he played the match of the tournament, in my opinion, against Carlos Alcaraz, because Carlos was playing well.
Yeah.
And Medvedev really went out of his comfort zone, came to the net, played aggressive, and deserved to win that match. Was so good in that semifinal. And maybe he will do the same against Sasha in 2 days. Yes, in 2 days. Yeah. So tomorrow we are recording a day later. So tomorrow they will play.
Yeah.
But again, Zverev looking more solid than ever. And he's doing well. He plays well in Australia.
Yeah, and you know, he's under investigation still. So he's going to keep playing well. He's got to pay those bills. Anyway, let's get to the cheeky babies. Yastremska looked great yesterday against Noskova.
I mean, Noskova
was definitely a little bit off yesterday. Certainly didn't play as well. But also you have to think that poor old Noskova, you know, she gets that great win over Iga, goes out against, who'd she play? I keep my blanking.
Svitolina.
Thank you, God. Goes out against Svitolina and gets the default essentially at 3-love. You know, a lot of us would be like, oh, great, you know, don't have to play a long taxing match. But actually, I think that hurt her.
I said the same thing. It's so interesting that you say that because
she looked rough as guts in the first little
bit of
the match.
Well, I said the same thing, and I was sitting with Radek Stepanek. I had lunch with him, who was playing the doubles legends, and his dad discovered Noskova. I didn't know, but they are from the same town in Czech Republic, and his dad discovered her basically and was her coach. And Radek told me, no, it's the best thing that happened to her. Because I said exactly the same thing. He said she had a billion phone calls, a billion messages. She didn't sleep 1 minute after that win against Iga Świątek. And she was just like, a bird on electricity, basically. And he thought that it would have been really, really a big challenge for her to beat Svitolina that day, unless Svitolina had somehow either self-destructed or gotten injured. But he said that the day and a half after she beat Iga were really rough in a great way, but so much energy wasted on just being excited and answering
her phone. And she's 19.
And she's so nice. And she's 19. And I have to say, in terms of matchup, the big hitters hate to play big hitters.
Yeah.
That's like, for example, Camilla Giorgi, the player she loses to, are you would think are somebody who plays, you know, the Vincis of the world,
the Paulinis.
But actually, she loses to the Pliskovas, she loses to the Rybakinas, she loses to the Sabalenkas. Now she's not at her top form, Giorgi is. But when she was playing her really great matches, she would always lose to Carolina.
Yeah.
She would always lose to the big hitters. And big hitters, the reason they hit big is they don't want to be running around and they don't want to be dictated at. They want to dictate. And you could see Jastrzemska hits the ball almost bigger than Noskova.
Oh my God. Not almost. 100% more. It was like she was like 7 miles an hour harder, at least with her ground stroke speed. And Noskova hits the ball big. And Jastrzemska is just pummeling the shit out of the ball. I mean,
especially
this is a girl that's come through qualifying and battled in qualies.
Mm.
Like, won every match in qualifying in three sets. Mm. She also was 93 in the world.
Yeah.
So she technically should have been in the main draw.
Yeah.
But because of all the special rankings, like Angie Kerber.
Naomi Osaka.
Naomi Osaka. Well, Naomi got a wild card, didn't she?
I don't know,
but there were definitely some people in the draw with special rankings.
Mm.
So it would have been interesting to see without those special rankings people getting in, would she have gotten into the main draw on her own?
Right.
And where would she be if she hadn't played qualies in some respects? Because she's the type of player that if she plays a lot of matches, now she's seeing the ball really well and she's not overplaying and not overhitting. And I mean, she still overhits sometimes, but you know, that's her game.
But a little more structured.
A little more structured. And also being tired, I think, helps players like that because they don't want to run around.
Yeah.
They go for it.
Yeah.
And they're seeing the ball so big.
Yeah, that's
that
a good point.
I'm telling you, she's not going to be a rollover.
I mean, she's two wins away from pulling a Raducanu.
And I said, that will never, ever, ever happen again. And I cannot believe that I could be completely and utterly wrong. She's got to win two matches. And she can do it.
She can do it.
She plays
has the game because
well
she has the game. She can hit anybody.
And she has
great
the chutzpah.
Serve.
She has the chutzpah. Her serve is a little bit The only thing with her serve is she can hit it really well.
Yeah.
But there are patches where
she double faults.
Because
also.
Her technique is not great. And I just want to say something on Noskova. We know that she was a part of the Melanie Molitor little group. So maybe when she left Stepanek's dad, she went to Melanie Molitor, who completely fucked her game up. Because her serve is woeful. Because Melanie Molitor does not teach good technique on the serve. In particular, the groundies are one thing, but on the serve, she believes that, you know, girls can't hit kick serves and all this sort of stuff. I mean, I've spoken to a couple of Czech coaches and she is, first of all, she's brutal on these players. And apparently Noskova like bailed out of that training camp because she was just like, it was too much. But also the technique that she has now, you know, implemented into Noskova's game is what hurts her because her elbow could not be any lower on her serve. So I know that's a work in progress for her current coaches. Geez, I tell you what, that's the one thing about Melanie Molitor. She's got to just realize that the worst part of her daughter's game was her serve.
Yeah.
So don't teach her serve.
Yeah.
And she teaches the same serve to everybody.
Yeah.
Like Bencic, Noskova, it's fucking
and
so
Bencic got,
bad.
I think she improved it quite well. But the thing with Noskova is that when she played Iga, she played at night. I think the roof was closed. It's definitely easier to serve at night in Rod Laver Arena. The breeze settles down.
And she's Czech. They love indoors.
Yes, exactly. It feels a bit more indoors.
Yeah.
And then even if your serve has maybe a little bit of a glitch in the technique, even I could serve indoors, you know, and I had a terrible serve. But then with the wind, with the heat, that's when things can go off. And yes, Jastrzemska was the better player yesterday, absolutely.
Yep. Yep.
And the way she served it out was really impressive.
And a little good thing that she did before the serving out of the game, she took out a note. You know, obviously all players, we write down, like, you know, all the things that we want to remember under stress, whether it be, you know, take your time before the serve, make sure you go for your inside out forehand, whatever it is, it's all written there. Or maybe there's a game plan specifically in there for the person you're playing. So I thought it was great that she sat down and didn't rely on looking at her coach and her mom and like thinking about everything. She got the piece of paper out, read the piece of paper, walked down that end and served a brilliant game mm-hmm. and executed yes. really well. And so I think it's because she had that very
clear
game plan. She read her.
Unlike somebody else.
Unlike Alcaraz. He should have had a bloody piece of paper in front of him last night saying, hit it to the forehand.
No, no. He should have had a book that just repeated over yeah. and over again.
It's
over
like
again.
What you do when you used to get in trouble at school. I will not talk in class.
Exactly,
I will
exactly.
not talk
like
in
Bart
class.
Simpson.
Yeah. It would should have just been, you have to play to his forehand. You have to play to his forehand. Oh, my God. Anyway, let's not get into that again. So Yastremska is through, and the evening match was Kalinskaya against Qinwen Zheng, and what an interesting match that was. I think the thing that we loved about that match more than anything was how well-behaved they both were.
Both. Unbelievable. We were talking about it in the booth, so I called it for Worldfield, you called it for ESPN, and we kept talking about when Qinwen lost the first set, how calm she looked on the bench. She didn't panically look up at her coach. She just like closed her eyes, tried to find a way to win this match. And the same on the other side. In the end, Anna got, I think, very tired. She had played a lot of tennis.
Yeah.
And you could see she had her hip or thigh was bothering her a little bit. That's when she started to get a bit flustered about the birds and yeah. the seagulls and
yeah, I'm
stuff.
Like, girlfriend.
Yeah.
They ain't going away.
Yes. That was like at the very end when she was down 1-4 and Qinwen was playing so well that it felt like, because they were really close and level and all of a sudden the paths just divided and Anna got slightly worse, slightly dropped her level and Qinwen just raised on a completely different standard. And it was really mesmerizing to see how she came back. From and honestly, the most pressure in that top half is on Qinwen, and she's
for
only
sure.
21 years old. And I said it in the booth too. We think of her as this experienced player who is going to make the final. Of course, why wouldn't she? She's so talented. Last year at the US Open was her first quarterfinal.
Yeah.
This is 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Girlfriend has not played that many quarterfinals and second weeks of Grand Slam tournaments. So she needs to find that experience too. And she handled it brilliantly. We know her game, how much damage it can do, but how she handled the situation of being the highest seed left in the top half with only her second Grand Slam quarterfinal.
Yeah.
Chapeau, man. I was so impressed.
I thought she served really well in the end. You know, and everyone could sort of critiques this funky service motion, but I was saying last night, and I'm the first to critique a service motion if I think it's shit, but you know, the ball toss is a little funky. She has the hitch on that, and then the arm gets a little bit weird. But when it gets into, like, sort of midway through the serve, it's a really, really good serve. Like, trophy position mm-hmm. with the elbow is high. You guys all know how I feel about the elbow, Noskova. But I think she gets the elbow up high, which allows her to go to pronate, to go to the backhand, or to slide it big down the tee. And she hits some big serves in the end in the third set.
Yeah.
And also, for those at home, the reason why she hit like four or five incredibly difficult bounce smashes or smashes out of the air,
mm-hmm.
her overhead is fantastic
very
because
good.
She doesn't have to worry about the ball toss.
Mm.
And her technique is very good. Mm. The elbow is high. She can, and she didn't hesitate for 1 millisecond in hitting an overhead. And we know, Petko, a lot of chicks don't necessarily under pressure like to hit it overhead. They'd rather hit a drive volley, and not this one. She just puts that racket up there and just smashes it, just like Serena. Like, give it to me and I'm going to hit it and I'm going to make it 99% of the time. And she did that beautifully last night. But her composure, her ability to not overplay, I think that's the one thing, because she's still young. She has so much power that sometimes she pulls the trigger a little bit early. And I said it in the coverage yesterday. She has to learn yellow light. Like, she has green light, red light, like, and she has to find the middle ground, which so does Yastremska, and Yastremska did that really well yesterday too, under pressure. You don't always have to red line every single shot. You know, in tennis, there is the orange light, stay with the point, green light, go, right? And she has, when she started to do that really well in the third set and the end of the, in the tiebreak in the second set, in the second set towards the end, she was really controlled with when to go for it. And then Kalinskaya, on the other hand, got a little bit frustrated because she wasn't getting the errors and she wasn't getting those short balls. And I just thought Qinwen, the way she closed that out yesterday was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it was. And just one thing on the second serve, she does tend to serve always the slice that goes either into the body or into the forehand. I think that's why she serves a lot of double faults. She's the Woman remaining in the field that has served the most double faults, also the most aces.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's the reason she's struggling against Sabalenka and these big forehand players.
Yeah.
Because if she, they know it's coming. They're Sabalenka ready. Is waiting there already with the full swing to take a full hit at it.
Yeah.
And I think if she can incorporate a kick, especially on clay, man, she will be very, very hard to beat.
She just got to get the ball toss back a little bit on the second serve. It's really far ahead of her on the first serve and then still far ahead of her on the second serve. If she gets the ball toss back just ever so slightly and then gets that pronation and that kick, then she'll be fine because she has the motion, which is really important
to be
able to hit the kick serve. She's just got to get her toss back, which I know her coach, Pere Riba, is going to probably work on. I mean, the dude, he grew up on clay, so he knows exactly how to hit a kick serve. So I'm sure he's going to implement that into a game. And I'm excited for him.
Me too. And he, Sana, we interviewed him just before the match when he was in the box. And I asked him, what did you work? Is there something in specific that you worked on in the off season? And he was like, actually, the forehand, the backhand, and I was like, he still sees so much upside to her game. There are still so many things he's working on. And there is, and rightfully so. And there wasn't like one thing that is still missing in the repertoire. He was like, basically
everything.
And he said, she's still so young. There is still so much. I don't even know where to begin. So look at her. She's in the semifinals. She's the highest seed left in the top half. She has a very good chance to get into the final. And there are still so many things that her coach wants to improve and is excited about. And we're excited. I just wanted to say one or a couple of sentences about Anna Kalinskaya. She played all tournament long and all Australian trip long because she played in Adelaide, she played in Brisbane and won a couple of matches everywhere. She played much better than her ranking. She's ranked 75 right now. She will be ranked in the top 50, close to a seeded position, 38, I think.
Good, yeah.
And I think that's much more her ranking. We saw it yesterday. The first set and a half was really, really high quality.
She's so good.
She's so good. The ball striking.
The serve is good.
Yeah.
I talked to Patricia Tarabini, her coach. You know, one thing they wanted to work on the serve in particular was I was like, well, what are you working on the serve? She goes, taking her time. That's it. Nothing technical. Just take her time. And she does tend to get a little bit pissy pants. Not pissy pants, but when things go wrong, she starts rushing.
Mm-hmm.
So take the time on the serve. If she's looking for the forehand, she said she's really confident, and she was fantastic last night. She just ran out of gas, I think, in the third, and just Chinwen started to get a little bit more shape on the forehand, which pushes her opponents back, and then she can attack on both the forehand.
Yeah,
and
we had a really interesting stat throughout the tournament. Chinwen has hit 64% of the rally shots with the forehand, and yesterday in the first set,
yes, she was not.
She was 46%.
Yeah,
and which also speaks to the game plan of Anna Kalinskaya. She somehow managed to have Chinwen just hit backhands. And her backhand is great, but you just don't get that same angle. And especially her backhand is flat.
Yes.
And Anna Kalinskaya, she likes that flat shot. And then in the second set, she managed to go around a bit more, take more forehands from the center of the court. And it really turned the whole match around. And especially what you just mentioned with the shape, that's the ball that Anna Kalinskaya doesn't like as much. And she missed a few more shots, and all of a sudden we win the third set.
It was the one thing that Mary Jo said as well. She just got to start looking. Mary Jo, who I was doing the match with at East Bend, said she's got to start looking for the forehand. I don't know why she's not, because also the shape of her forehand is what gives so many women on the WTA so many problems, because there's only a few players that play with that shape and that spin, and they all love the flat ball, but the toppy ball is a little bit more. It's a little bit more difficult to control, especially when you get a bit nervous. So overall, Chinwen now against Jastrzemska. I don't think this is any given that Chinwen is going to win this match, because Jastrzemska at her very best.
I agree with you.
Who was once 21 in the world. And just a little thing on Kalinskaya, she was also going up in the rankings last year and then had that awful period of time where she hamstring injury. She missed, I believe, the French Open and Wimbledon. So she's going to make up shitloads of points at those tournaments. So I suspect that she can be in the top 30 by the end of the year. And I want to give a little shout out to her coach,
Patricia
Tarabini, who's been with her for over 4 years now. Yeah. They have gone through the ups, the downs, the can I do this, can I not? And Patricia's just supported her. She's like a daughter to her. They train together in Miami. It's a great relationship, coach player relationship. Super happy for Patricia that she's put in all this time and effort with Anna, and they both are now reaping some benefits of it. And Anna's a really lovely girl.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been interesting for her, though, because her, you know, the flag is gone from her because she's under the Russian flag, but her mom is Ukrainian. Yeah. So I bet you that's a very strange dynamic for her to deal with at home, and certainly on the tour with the Ukrainian players. I was almost like interested to see her play against Yastremska to see how she'd handle that. But anyway,
well,
all right,
and
guys.
Just one word on the Yastremska Chinwen match up. I'm interested to see how Diana will react to that loopy forehand of Chinwen. I almost think that it will be okay for her because
she's
tall. Can set up, yes, and she has so much power. And if she has the time to set up and swing through it, that might be, and then she has the flat ball into Chin Wen's forehand where she can be sometimes a little late. It's going to be a really interesting matchup.
It's one of them is going to be, well, they're both into their first semifinal of a Grand Slam, which is already in and of itself, as you know, Petco, a daunting feeling when you walk on the court as you did at the French Open where you're like, oh my God, I'm in a semifinal, holy shit. So they're both going to feel a little weird, but it's good that one is going through it as is the other. So it'll be interesting to see who handles that situation better. Of course, Coco and Sabalenka are also today. I think that Sabalenka wins this match comfortably if she plays like she's been playing this tournament and Coco's been playing this tournament, because Coco has not been at her best. Will she bring her best today? I'm sure she will, knowing that she has to, and she is not the favorite in this match. And it's the first time she hasn't been the favorite playing a match, and I think she's going to feel less stress, Coco, and I think Sabalenka's clearly going to feel some pressure because she knows she is, oh my God, this draw is so open for someone like her. And she tends to get a little bit crazy when that happens. That happened at the US Open a couple of years ago. It happened last year. Like, she can get a little bit nutso when she's like, oh my God, I'm supposed to win this now. And if she doesn't and comes out and plays like she has this whole tournament, I'm just going to tip my hat and go, girlfriend, you know how to dominate matches and tournaments.
And I really,
now.
Really think, exactly. I really think if she manages to defend this title with the draw being open after everything that has happened last year, where she was up a set and a break in almost every single Grand Slam tournament, I think she will unlock another level in her head. And I think we can see somebody very, very dominant on all surfaces in all Grand Slam tournaments, with Iga being her biggest rival, especially on the clay courts.
On clay.
And Rybakina on the grass courts.
It's going to be great. We look forward to it. Of course, the two women semifinals are tonight, so we'll give you the wrap-up
I have to
tomorrow,
go again. I'm again
tomorrow.
Late.
She's also late. Patko's got to play another match today because her match got suspended yesterday because the court was shit. It was bubbles. There was bubbles on the court. But anyway, all right, guys, we appreciate you hanging with us. We appreciate you all around the world. I know there's a lot of you everywhere, and we really appreciate you taking the time to listen to us. All right, kids, we're going to say not again good night because it's the morgen. We're going to say cheers.
Cheers.
Bye.